Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever and whenever you happen to be listening to us in this great wide world brought together by the internet. We are the last three guys to do a podcast. We are back. I'm John Morgo alongside Daniel Bolton and Leon Brown. Daniel is calling in for us tonight, not in our studio. And also, we're going to get right to what we have to talk about because we have a special guest, an exclusive interview with the incoming head men's basketball coach at Georgia State, head coach Rob Lanier. Coach, are you there? How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Thank you very much for agreeing to take time out of your busy schedule to sit down with us and talk about the upcoming men's basketball season that will be starting up with Midnight Madness in a couple of weeks. And first of all, Coach, looking over the Georgia State roster, I'm seeing a lot of talent has been gone. You got no DeMarcus Simons. You got no Devin Mitchell. Really, the talent that you have, you got Kane Williams, Nelson Phillips back. You also have Chris Clerkley. What is your strategy to try and build this team coming into this season?
Well, I think we've got a significant amount of talent returning, and we're excited about the guys that we've added. I think Ron Hunter and the staff deserve a lot of credit. I think they had some really good players at the forefront of their success last season. Mm-hmm. And had some really good players waiting for their opportunity. And so we had two guys setting out that were transfers, Justin Roberts from DePaul and Corey Allen transferred from the University of Detroit, very good players. So, we've got a core group of guys that were waiting for an opportunity. They're going to get that opportunity to show what they can do. We're gonna try to become a great defensive team and to try to become a great team as a whole and approach it as a collective. But I'm excited about the talent that we have.
Again, looking over your roster, again, a lot of youngsters on it. You do have Damon Wilson, the redshirt senior out of transferred in from Pitt. What you're looking at your freshman, though, who has been really impressive in summer camp?
Well, we got two freshmen in particular, Joe Jones and Jalen Thomas. Jalen is from Detroit, and Joe is from Buffalo, New York. Mm-hmm. They both got tremendous size and ability. They're both tough, hardworking kids that I think they both have really bright futures. So we're excited about both of those young men.
Yeah, I see Joe Jones the third has a 6'9", 245. Jalen Thomas, a little taller and a little lankier, only at 6'10", 230. More of a wing player, would you say?
No, not a wing player. They're both front court players. Joe's definitely more of a low post, five-man type, physical, bruising player who's a tremendous rebounder and working on becoming a great defender. He's got great upside as a defender. He's got a lot to learn there. Jalen, probably a little bit more extensive offensive package at this particular stage, but a similar player who can rebound and defend and just needs to learn the college game, but he'll get his opportunities.
And, Coach, I'm looking over your non-conference schedule, how the teams that have to play to start out your tenure. You've got the opener with Bruton Parker and then five straight road games, including a back-to-back Duke on Friday, Georgetown on Sunday. I know that this schedule has kind of been inherited by you, but what are you looking at in terms of development through that five games? And of course, after the Georgetown matchup, you head over to Riverside, California for a pair with Prairie View and either Central Arkansas or Cal Baptist.
Yeah, I think it's a challenging schedule. That's always good for a team. And what you're always looking for is continued growth and development. I think all coaches, all teams want to play their best basketball at the end of the year when it matters the most. And your schedule gives you an opportunity to take on some challenges and grow as the season goes on. And certainly those are some great challenges that we face, and we're excited about those games. Those challenges should give us a lot of information about who we are as a team and what we can become.
Speaking with Georgia State incoming head coach Rob Lanier here on The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast, John Morgo, Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. I've got one more question for you, Coach, and then I'll turn it over to Daniel and Leon. But what I wanted to ask you is, Coach Hunter, he was very vociferous in how hard it was to schedule good teams to come to Atlanta and play Georgia State in the sports arena. Have you been reaching out to other coaches to see if they could possibly want to come down to the sports arena?
Well, everyone's trying to get home games. I think that's the same thing for everyone. You know, it's hard to get home games no matter what level you're coaching at or trying to schedule. So we're always trying to get people to get home games. You know, it's proven that the more home games you can get, the better off you are.
Right.
But because that's the case, everyone's trying to do it.
Yes.
So, you just have to try to manipulate the schedule in your favor the best you can. And, we will work at trying to do so.
All right, Daniel, do you have a question for Coach?
Yeah, I do. First off, Coach, I do want to say on behalf of The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast, because the three of us have been affiliated with Georgia State or are affiliated with Georgia State. I just want to say welcome to the Panther family. And it's great. It's great to have you, and I think you're going to do a great job here.
I appreciate that.
No problem. As a first-year head coach, how much pressure is it on you, not from anybody else, but on yourself, to, I guess, you're going to present a winning pedigree here. How much pressure is it for the players and coaches and student section, et cetera, to get them to buy into your winning pedigree?
Well, the players want to win. You know, we got competitive guys, and I think it's good that they've been well coached. And it was attractive to me to come to Georgia State because the program was proven to be successful. There is a winning culture here that made this situation attractive for me, and the fact that the players have been well coached. They can recognize when we're doing things that will lead to winning. So, but it was touched on earlier that we've got some guys back who may not have been at the forefront of much of the recent success. So we got some guys that are chomping at the bit to have bigger roles. And so sometimes that enhances the buy-in. Guys are more inclined to buy in much quicker when they want to play. Everyone's starting with a clean slate, and competitively, there's always pressure to win, no matter what the circumstances you're in. If you're in this, absolutely, you want to win, and there's some pressure inherent in that. So it's all about doing the job every single day, and letting the chips fall where they may.
All right, Leon.
Yeah, you doing, Coach? This is Leon Brown. Man, I look at, like, you know, you have Duke coming up as far as at Duke coming to your first game. You know, granted, you know, that's a ACC powerhouse with a legendary Coach K, but if you are to get a W on that game, that would be huge. I mean, man, that would be legend.
Well, that's a pretty strong observation on your part. I hate to get into coach speak on you, brother, but we really got to take this one at a time. You know, people always say, "Are you ready for the season?" And if I'm being 100% honest, no, I'm not ready for the season. Mm-hmm. I'm ready for practice tomorrow.
Right.
That's right. And the goal is to take each day and get us prepared for the season. I'm excited about that, and I look forward to each day, working with these guys. I've been so excited about the response I've gotten from this group, and I feel like when we go in the gym, we got a chance to improve each day. There's no tug of war going on. It's just a matter of
you know, how soon guys can pick up the things that are going to be really important to winning in terms of the way that we're going to play. And so we've made some strides from June till now. We've got a long way to go, but I like the direction that we're headed in, and we'll take each challenge as it comes, and we won't be afraid of anyone. We won't back down from any of those challenges, and our expectations certainly will be high, but they'll be high because we took care of our business each day.
Again, continuing our conversation with Rob Lanier, head coach of Georgia State, being his first year with the Panthers coming this fall. Coach, you've looked at the Sun Belt, and it's going to be a lot different this season than it was last year. First of all, you got 20 conference games instead of 18. You got one that's kind of smack in December, and then you've got the conference tournament, which basically is getting up in terms of calculus in terms of understanding how this whole thing is going to operate. What is your initial impressions about the Sun Belt and the talent that is in the conference?
Well, I'm learning as I go. I've been watching films on teams throughout the league, and I already knew coming in that there were some really good coaches. You know, obviously, I'm a part of the fraternity, so I'm familiar with a lot of the guys who are in the league. Either personally or just through their reputation in our profession. So I knew I was coming into a league that has some tremendous coaches with some great programs. Scott Cross has a great history in the league, and now he's moved to another place.
Exactly. He's staying in the Sun Belt, going to Troy, I think.
That's right. Chris Ogden. I coached Chris Ogden for 2 years in college.
Really? Wow.
And then I worked with him for 6 years. So, to see the job that he's done and to be the coach of the year, he's got a program that's on the rise. I've known Bob Marlin for many years. I know a lot of these guys. So I know we've got our hands full, and a lot of great challenges and great programs, some really talented players in this league every year. So I've never been in that league that isn't tough.
Right.
So my expectations of league play in general in college basketball has always been that it's going to be highly competitive. And I know enough about the Sun Belt to know that that will be the same dynamic here.
And, Coach, you come from the University of Tennessee in Knoxville. How awkward was it for you personally when Georgia State went up there 2 weeks ago and shocked Tennessee at their home venue in football?
It was surprising, but it wasn't awkward at all. You know, I've gotten to know Sean Elliott a little bit. I know him already better than I know Jeremy Pruitt.
Right.
And, I think it's been my experience, I've been at plenty of schools, but in particular, University of Florida, University of Texas, University of Tennessee, programs with really good football culture.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been my experience that football success permeates a college campus in a very unique way. And so anytime your football program can have great success, it does so much for the rest of the athletic department and the university as a whole. So for our coaching staff building a program right now to go on the road and win an SEC game the way they did is good for all of us. So there's nothing awkward about that.
Right. Daniel, Leon, do you have anything further for Coach Lanier?
I don't.
Well, I got one. I understand, with working under Coach Rick Barnes once at Tennessee and the other one at Texas, do you feel that was great prep time? Going into this job right here, do you feel you're going to take a lot of what you've gathered into Georgia State?
Well, this for me is year 30 in the profession.
Oh, wow.
I spent 10 of those years with Rick. I spent 4 with Billy Donovan.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with a guy by the name of Jim Barron for 5 years at St. Bonaventure, who I learned a lot from. Jack Armstrong at Niagara, Dave Lato, who's currently the head coach at DePaul. I was his assistant for 2 years at Virginia. And I spent 4 years as a young head coach and went to the postseason a couple of times. So I've got a lot of experiences to draw from, including some great experiences with Coach Barnes. And I will try to draw from all of those experiences. And I think one of the mistakes that I tell people I made when I was a young coach is, you know, I had a lot to learn at the time. I probably got a job before I was prepared. My reputation as a coach on the rise was moving faster than my development as a coach.
Okay.
And so when I got the opportunity the first time, I probably tried to be a little bit too much like Rick Barnes in terms of the way we were doing things, because I had so much respect for him. And, you know, that press conference was 18 years ago. And although I've spent the last 8 years with Coach, I've grown a tremendous amount since that time. And I think I've got more clarity who I want to hire, who I want to recruit, how I want to play. And I'm just in a place where I have a real clear vision on how I want my program to operate, how I want my team to perform. And certainly Rick Barnes has a lot to do with that. But there's a lot of other people who have a lot to do with that as well.
All right, Coach, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us. And we hope to have you on sometime during the regular season. Thanks again.
Thanks, guys. Good.
All right. That was head coach Rob Lanier, head coach of the Georgia State Panthers. His first season coming up in a few weeks here, and he graciously donated some of his valuable time here for us in the last three guys to do a podcast. I thought it was interesting listening to him. I mean, I just thought that when he's going back to Knoxville, right, and here he's with the Georgia State football. He's got all these people, and Georgia State football delivers the victory. But I guess being as the one thing you know, if you're a coach, the one thing you know is you're going to lose your job eventually. And I guess it's not so much. Oh, hold on. I think we lost Daniel for a moment. Yeah, we did. Sorry, Daniel. Daniel, you're back. What I was saying is he said it wasn't awkward talking to Knoxville, going back to UT after that Georgia State victory. I guess it's because people know you do what you got to do in this business. It's just like any other business. In that, I'm very glad he was able to give us some of his time heading into the season. Midnight Madness for College Hoops starting in a couple of weeks.
But you know, John, you made a good point though.
Yeah.
Before you say eventually you're going to lose your job.
Exactly.
So do you? If the question is, you know, do you want to do it how Rob Hunter did it, or do you want to go out like the other way, which is the only other way there is? And
Resigning or right. retiring/resigning. Yes, exactly. And I thought it was another thought is interesting because, guys, he's got a lot of unproven talent on this roster. I mean, I'm looking at the roster. Really, the only names of people who contributed last year to the Sun Belt victory is Nelson Phillips and Kane Williams. A lot of unproven depth. There's going to be a lot of opportunities. But I think a lot of people in the Sun Belt are going to be licking their chops. They're going to be thinking that this is the year that Georgia State might be a little bit they're not an automatic lock to win the Sun Belt. They're not. And I don't know who you would give it to, but I think people sees this could be their chance. And the big challenge for Coach Lanier is they may give him this year, but he's got to get this team to the point where it doesn't rebuild, it reloads. And that boils down to recruiting and doing well with your squad. So there are a lot of opportunities for this squad. They're going to get tested right out of the gate with those back-to-back games, Duke and Georgetown, and then that trip to Riverside, California for that tournament the week before Thanksgiving. They do come home for two games, Charlotte and Dartmouth, and at Mercer, and then right into the Sun Belt with Arlington and Texas State at home. And then a couple days before Christmas to Dallas to play SMU. And then our favorite team comes in on the 30th. That, of course, Middle Georgia and Coach Scott Moe making that trip up from Cochran. He better bring some Scott's Barbecue with him. That's all I can say. We've been saying this for years.
Oh, yeah, you better believe it.
Yeah, but hopefully this is the year that we get to go and he gets some barbecue that we brings him up. But, again, they're going to be tested right out of the gate, and it's going to be an interesting year. Sun Belt primarily has always been a one-berth league, and I think what the league is trying to do now is maybe get that second berth, but they are really stacking the deck in terms of getting that top, making sure that top team gets into the championship round. I say that because only seeds 1 and 2 get an express lane trip to New Orleans. Everybody else, 3 through 10, has to play kind of a 4-team play-in tournament at the 3 and 4 seeds location. So that is going to make it very difficult. If you're like the 10 seed, you're going to have to go to the 3 seed, win both games, and then go to New Orleans. It's going to be very, very difficult for those squads to advance. And like I said, the Sun Belt is stacking the deck in terms of that. Although they have moved the conference tournament to the Smoothie King Center, that is where the Pelicans play. So the stakes are being raised, but boy, the Sun Belt really wants the 1 seed versus the 2 seed in that conference final with a berth to the NCAAs on the line, and they would really love for that number 2 seed, whoever loses that game, to get that at-large berth. I don't think it's going to happen, but they're just really trying for that to take place.
Look, John, the only way that there are really two ways that can happen. One, if you have a, let's say, a Georgia State that actually happens to have one of those great seasons, like at 27-2, but they lose the conference championship game, you would have to give it, and you lose it to the number 2 seed, possibly who's deserving of it because they won the automatic bid.
Right.
You would almost have to consider Georgia State at 27-2, and I'm just using Georgia State as an example,
right.
You would almost have to consider them as an at-large bid. Now, that goes into number two, point number two. They have to hope that other teams in those other non-power conferences, in those other conferences like the MEAC or the MAC, they have to hope that those bids aren't stolen.
Right.
Or even in the Power Five conferences, let's say Florida has been running the SEC all year long, and yet they lose to LSU in the SEC championship game, a team that needed to win the tournament to even get in because they weren't even in that large bid. So they have to hope that other teams and other conferences don't steal bids from them. That's the only way that really a conference like the Sun Belt can get 2 teams in.
Right, and I think that's what they're shooting for. But they have a hard row to hoe in order to get that. I don't think they're at that berth. I think maybe if you're from the American or CUSA, you will get 2 or 3 teams in. But really, conferences below that, it's just not going to happen. And I think we saw it with the tournament this year. Georgia State did win. They did get that seed and that berth. And what happened? They got a 14 seed.
Yes.
And we thought that was way too worse for them, that they deserved at least
12.
Thought they would get a 12. And as good as the Panthers were, to only get a 12 seed, it really tells you what the NCAA selection committee thinks of the Sun Belt.
Unfortunately, you know, but this is you guys probably didn't hear, but I was playing almost the Mission Impossible theme song.
Yes.
That, you know, this man, you know, you got Coach Lanier pretty much got a letter that, you know, hey, you got a Mission Impossible here.
Right.
Can you make it happen? Starting first with Duke as your first game.
Well,
who put that on the schedule?
Well, again, he's got a couple of warm-ups. He's got a home game on the 6th, the season opener against Bruton Parker, Dorothy Parker, and I don't know who else. Then they go to the College of Charleston on the 9th, and then, as Leon mentioned, Duke on November 15th.
So they got to come in 2-0.
You got to have those two Ws.
Yeah, you got to have momentum going against a team like that, and, you know, it can happen. It can happen the right way. But if he goes in with enough momentum, you know, enough of that, some of that feel goodness mm-hmm. for the team. We already seen Georgia State beat Tennessee already, an SEC team already this year. So, right. You know, they can lightning strike twice?
Yeah, exactly. But, again, he's missing his top four leading scorers from last season.
Yeah.
Kane Williams only averaging about 11.1. Damon Wilson did get some time. He's only at about 5.4. And then, as I mentioned, Nelson Phillips, 5.1. He only had one start. I thought he started more than that. But he's missing, I would say, almost 60% of his scoring from last season. And you are missing DeMarcus Simons, who, I mean, they were lucky that he came back for his senior season. His junior season. Everyone thought he was going to be gone after that last season. I think they considered it a godsend that he came back for that extra year.
He should have, you know, the NBA doesn't draft seniors.
Right.
It's unfortunate, but this isn't the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I believe this is his man's junior year this year. Or is this his junior year right now, DeMarcus Simons?
DeMarcus Simons, I think he left after his junior year. I think he had 1 year left.
Yeah.
And he decided to go
pro.
Yeah,
he left after his junior year.
And he did not get drafted, I don't think.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure if we start peeling back the layers on this young man, he's all summer getting paid for his services.
Yes.
And that, you know, you got to do the best for your family in this. And,
right.
But, yeah, but Coach Lanier does have his work. He has his work cut out for him. Let's hope that, you know, that the alumni and everybody who has major decision-making capabilities in this situation is patient.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, you know, we could get that culture.
Well, again, it's just a matter of being realistic.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a lot, like I said, and this is the point I was trying to make. You are losing a lot.
He lost a lot of weight.
I mean, there is there's opportunities for some people, but when you look at that schedule and you look at what he's got coming back, I mean, it's going to be very difficult for them to get to return to that pinnacle at least after a year or two. He's gonna need time to mold into a system and get the guys. Next year's recruiting class is gonna be very important for
him.
Absolutely,
but every major uphill battle is a major, I would say, opportunity to go off and gain notoriety. If he goes off and makes this happen, I mean, let's give him. He wins 60% of his games this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what it would do for his resume. I mean, it's great, you know. So every where there's a problem, there's opportunity.
And he kind of struck me as a very humble.
Absolutely,
because he said, you know, when he started out as a head coach, he's first to admit he wasn't ready. And I think that was very interesting for him to actually say, you know what, I wasn't ready with that opportunity. He's older now. He's wiser.
30 years in the profession,
and I think he's ready for whatever comes his way. At least he starts the Sun Belt at home again. Even though you're going to Duke, it's not going to matter in terms of the Sun Belt. What really matters is when we start off with UT Arlington with the Mavericks and on that first Sun Belt game on December 19th. And again, the Sun Belt has gotten a lot harder with those two games back in. It was 18 conference games the last 2 years. They've pushed it back to 20. And that means that you figure for a full home and home, it's 22. So now they've gone to 20, so there's going to be two teams that they will not play on a home and home. And looking over, trying to see one little thing here about where he was as a head coach before. He was at Siena.
Yeah, that was back
Siena. Yeah, that was from 2001 to 2005.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so up
that was
there,
18 years ago.
Up there in the Metro Athletic, the MAC, not the Mac, but the MAC,
mm-hmm.
Two A's,
but the MAC, yeah,
exactly, the MAC,
yeah, double A MCO.
So again, we'll be sure to monitor his progress, and a lot going on with Georgia State, also on the women's side as well. We'll be monitoring that team as that gets going. I think got some opportunities for some really big success in. Georgia State. Again, the Panthers women's schedule, non-conference schedule is announced, and we'll go through a little bit of that. They also start off with three home games. There's a exhibition, well, technically five home games, and I'll tell you what I mean by that. There's an exhibition with Tuskegee on the 29th of October, season opener November 5th against Toledo. That's a 21-12 team from last year. That will not be easy. And then that,
no, it won't.
And then there's a game on November 11th at home. That's the return leg from Florida International. They went 5-24 last year, as they're still having their troubles down there in University Park. Then it's the road game. That's not really a road game, but it'll still be a very tough matchup for the Panthers. They'll be playing Georgia Tech at McCamish, third time in 4 years that they'll be over there. Then another home game with Alabama A&M on the 26th, 2 days before Thanksgiving. Then after Thanksgiving, it's over to El Paso, where they'll be participating in the UTEP Thanksgiving Classic. That'll be games with North New Mexico State on the 29th of November and UTEP on the 30th. I'm going to go to the center of town and announce at the top of my lungs that I get my salsa from New York City. Then it'll be December 5th at Furman, December 7th at UNC Greensboro, then three home games, a big matchup on December 18th, home with Maryland, wound up as the number 11 team in the country. They lost in the second round to UCLA last year. And finally, the Georgia State Christmas Classic games, Saturday and Sunday, South Carolina State and Southern Illinois at Edwardsville. So interesting that Maryland is coming to the sports arena. So I think the biggest home game for both of them, it would be that Maryland game. And I was talking to the coaches about this, and it was basically Maryland's idea. They didn't even want a return leg. They wanted a game in Atlanta so they could recruit, and they really didn't feel like going to Georgia Tech. So we all know how big Georgia is in terms of basketball talent. It's as arguably as good as football. They're trying to put their foot in and claim some of that recruits for themselves, and they figure showing up, playing Georgia State is the way to do it. So that'll be a huge game. And of course, as you all know, or if you don't, I'm about to say I do the play-by-play for the women's basketball. Hopefully we can get Daniel and Leon in on at least one game going this season. Hopefully it will be one of them. I think we're going to be doing the Reinhardt Kennesaw State men's game. That'll be an exhibition, I think, for Kennesaw State. It'll be Monday, November 4th. I'll check on that, and we'll be sure to give you guys all the information so you can catch us on that. Again, you can catch us live in a week from Saturday to September 28th, 3:30. We will be live at Fifth Third Bank Stadium for our college football show. We'll be breaking down the Reinhardt-Kennesaw State matchup. You can hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. We want your questions. We want your comments. It'll be truly interactive experience, and you can catch us there again, 3:30 p.m. fly from Fifth Third Bank Stadium as we'll be counting down the Reinhardt-Kennesaw State football game. And speaking of college football and NFL, well, Leon, I'm sorry, but the San Diego Chargers will not go 16-0 this season.
Yeah, that was the upset of the day. Everything else, all the other games pretty much are going or have gone according to plan. I was shocked out of this world. I say when I was pretty much in the dark after this. After the game went off, I didn't really want to talk to anybody. Phone was cut off. One thing I've noticed is that we're going to have to reach some type of agreement with Melvin Gordon. I like our young running back, Aaron Eckler, born 1995. He's a youngster. But at the same time, 3.9 yards per carry at 13 carries or 66 yards is not going to – that's going to put too much transparency on my offense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just weren't doing much. It wasn't much going. And with someone like Melvin Gordon last year, who averaged 5.1 yards per carry, that's going to keep all opposing defenses honest. And they just weren't. And someone like the Lions, who I kind of liken to the Dolphins to a certain degree. I mean, my goodness, I really don't have too much. You know, they're a professional football team, absolutely, but they are not in the same class as the Chargers as of right now. And for us to lose a game like that, it looks extra bad. I mean, you know, like when we look at how your team, the Patriots, put the 40 burger whammy on the Dolphins, that's how you do teams that are of inferior competition.
Right.
You don't play down to the level of competition those are teams that are mentally weak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they play up to their competition, they play down to their competition. We don't need that. Teams like when we play against the Detroit Lions, who more than likely will not make the playoffs this year. You gotta put the you gotta put the rock bottom smack down on teams like that and let them know who onto what time it is, and you're also sending a statement to the rest of the teams on your schedule going forward. And right now, the Chargers, unfortunately, with that loss, are looking kind of average right now. Like, we look vulnerable, and that's not the look that we need right now. So,
Well, I don't know if you guys have heard the news, but General George Patton has actually enlisted the help of the Miami Dolphins because he needs people experience with tanking.
Oh, there it is.
So,
we can say that because the last 2 weeks, the Miami Dolphins have just been god-awful on defense. If I'm not mistaken, let me see if my math is correct. They're actually giving up 51 points per game.
Right.
They gave up 43 today to New England, and they're only giving you back 5. So they're only putting up 5 points per game because they got shut out today. Miami is terrible. I think that's what we know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they are tanking. I don't know. I don't want to throw that word around, basically. They look bad. The NFC West is probably going to be the best conference in America. They are about to have 2 teams possibly go 2-0 because right now the Rams are letting everybody know that they have forgot about last year, and just because you didn't get a pass interference call doesn't mean that we're still better than you.
Right.
So they are letting people know that you are still on notice, that the LA Rams are. The San Francisco 49ers are 2-0. They've looked great with Jimmy Garoppolo back healthy. And I don't know if this is a surprise or maybe this is just a, you know, just a phase right now, but the Seattle Seahawks are 2-0. You know, I think a lot of people still thought, even though they were a playoff team last year, I think they still thought that, you know, it was going to be the Rams and then everybody else. But,
well, look,
again, here comes Seattle.
I got to disagree with you there, Leon, Daniel. Seattle hasn't proven anything. They've played Cincinnati and Pittsburgh. Those are the 2 teams.
It's the NFL, John.
Well,
it's the NFL, and yeah, they haven't played really anybody to their competition. We'll see. We'll see how they act. And I mean, we can make an argument that the 49ers haven't either.
Right.
You know, we can make that same argument. But needless to say, in the league, listen, they went up to Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh, regardless on what kind of team they have, that is still a tough place to play. They went up there and they took care of business and they handled the situation. Yeah, sure. We'll see what they have when they play New Orleans and when they play Carolina, Atlanta, all of these other teams that they have to play. When they go up against Baltimore, which might be a better tester for them this year. So, I mean, you know, we'll see what happens when it comes to that.
But I see your point, though.
They haven't been really tested yet.
To both your points. Pittsburgh is 0-2 right now.
Right.
I can't remember the last time that Pittsburgh has been 0-2 right now, and they have the 49ers coming up next game, which, you know.
Right.
And the way the 49ers look today, and they're at San Francisco next week, they could be 0-3 next week easily. So
yeah.
If you're Pittsburgh, and which, you know, after 0-3, you can honestly say it's free fall time.
Right.
And then it gets even uglier. You know, let's see, the Bengals might be a little relief. Like they might get that W, but at the same time, that's a divisional game. Your divisional opponents always play you hard. Then afterwards, they have the Ravens. That's a L.
Mm-hmm.
The way things are looking.
Yep.
Baltimore. Then they have the Chargers, which the way things look, I'm pretty sure we'll get our stuff together. That'll be a L. Then they have a W coming with the Dolphins. We're talking about 2-6 by the time midseason comes around. Or 2-5. But they'll be 2-6 because then they have the Colts and Rams, and then they have the Browns coming up. It's going to be a real difficult season for us. So, therefore, is this like the beginning of the end of the Mike Tomlin era?
I think so. I think we've been saying that all season. I think Ben Roethlisberger has been showing his age a little bit. Looks like he's lost a little bit of a step, and this could be Drew. And not to go too far afield, Drew Brees out with a hand injury. This could be hit the start of his decline. I think we've been saying that Tomlin is probably in the middle of his last season in Pittsburgh. Because as you said multiple times, Leon, you know, when things go south, we need a fall guy. And 9 times out of 10, it's going to be your coach. So
politics demands it.
Yep.
And normally it's a bundle as well. It's going to be your coach and your GM. Sometimes your GM is not saved as well, and then they just want to start a clean slate. Well, let's bring in a GM who can bring his guy in.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like that kind of thing that's going to go on. So, yeah, the Pittsburgh Steelers, man, they look like a mess right now. And I'm not going to sit here and say that they miss Antonio Brown. You know, I don't think that's really the issue because Antonio Brown doesn't play defense.
Right.
So they have a lot more issues other than on offense. They're having a hard time stopping people.
Yeah. And, you know, to John's point, the way that the Pittsburgh Steelers are looking right now, that win, those Seattle's 2-0. You cannot take away 2-0. 2-0's 2-0.
Right.
That win should have been a little more convincing. If we look, I mean, maybe because we've been talking about college football for a while, but, you know, how the college football community does, you know, a win isn't just a win. It's a matter of what you want. And I feel that, granted, the Seattle Seahawks did put up 4 touchdowns against a team they should have put 4 touchdowns up on, but the Seattle defense allowed 26 points against a team minus the running back and minus the star wide receiver. And that, you know, it's 2-0, but it's like they could be seen, in my opinion. I think I don't think Seattle is like – they're not really looking threatening like that. You know, like when you look at the way Baltimore – you know, because it's not to – when you're playing as inferior competition, you got to really pile drive inferior competition.
Yes,
that's what I'm saying. Like when you look at the mentally strong teams, mm-hmm. like the manner in which the Patriots played the Dolphins, that was not a 28-26 game right there. That game was over like at the end of the second quarter. And when you're playing against inferior competition, to the teams that really go further or furthest, they make inferior competition look like inferior competition.
Right.
You know, we see this all the time in college.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm looking at Seattle, you know, they're, and I can say the same thing about my Chargers. You know, I wasn't really surprised that we lost to the Lions. I was disappointed, but I wasn't surprised because we barely beat the Colts, and the Colts have a first time starter, and we barely beat those guys.
Right.
I mean, it came down to overtime. So then the Lions, I mean, they had all the tape on us. I mean, you can just study that right there. Okay, they're leaking somewhere. And mm-hmm. we can exploit that. So, yeah, and to Daniel, we have the Philadelphia Eagles and the Atlanta Falcons, which I believe is the game of the night.
It is.
Coming up. What are we looking to see?
We're looking to see if the Falcons can actually stop people. Because they were unable to stop anybody against Minnesota or looking to see if their offensive line can give Matt Ryan time. We're looking to see if the running game can get going. I think Matt Ryan has proven that he can pass the ball well. At least we're not going to be doing the why can't Julio Jones get into the end zone count, because that has been effectively put to rest. So at least thank whatever higher authority you happen to believe in for that, so we don't have to listen to that. But, yeah, the Falcons have got a lot of questions. And, again, Atlanta Falcons, we're just so – the fan base is so absolutely disposed to sky is falling mentality, because usually the sky is falling. And let's be honest. Whenever Atlanta thinks – you know, I mean, look at last year. Lost one game. Oh, my gosh. It's a lost season. And it was a lost season. Of course, the injuries were a part of it. We thought, you know, the camp is, we're going to get back from these injuries, and we never did. At least the injuries are not an issue so far. It's just production on the field. But if you read the Falcon Twitter, which I unfortunately do, it's a lot of the opinion of, oh, man, Falcons will never win a game. And there are people like that who, once you see something go wrong, you are convinced that nothing will ever go right. and there is a lot of that where it's just extrapolating the negative. And who knows, maybe this is the time that the Falcons can come back. They can come back against Philadelphia. It's not going to be easy, but the Falcons have a home team. The Falcons got a home game. They tell the team to, okay, put the loss behind you, forget about it, move on. Fans, unfortunately, never do that. We need to tell the fans to do that. And as long as there is social media for the fans to basically work out their frustrations and aggravations, that's not going to happen, and it just kind of snowballs from there.
Oh, yeah, and let's remind people as well, John and Leon, that, listen, the last time, if I'm not mistaken, if they fall to 0-2 tonight, no, we don't hit the panic button, because I think the last time we fell to 0-2, we went to the Super Bowl that year.
Right.
So it's like, listen, we still have time to work out the kinks. Now, if we start talking with 2-5, and this is mid-season now, mm-hmm. it's hard to climb out of a 2-5 hole.
Right.
It can be done, but it's hard to climb out of a 2-5 hole.
Well, if they if
they
lose tonight, mm-hmm. they have to beat Indianapolis next week up in Indy. They have to win that game.
Without question.
Yes.
Without question. Yeah, that is a must-win game for them. A 1 o'clock game, luckily for them. I believe that's a home game, if I'm not mistaken.
But no, it's in Indianapolis.
They have to win that game. Oh, is that in Indy? Okay.
Yep.
Well, hey, listen, you don't have Andrew Luck over there. Brissette
right.
struggled today. So you have to hope that you can go up in Indy and get that victory as well. But you want to start here with going up against one of the elite teams in the NFC in Philadelphia, a team that's going to challenge Dallas for the NFC East Championship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I really think if I can just go ahead and make my prediction now.
Go ahead.
I think that they can get it done tonight. I think that Philadelphia, in the last couple of times they've been down here, they really don't play too well. If this was in Philadelphia, I would say we would be in trouble. But this is in Atlanta, and this is a Sunday night game. And Atlanta plays some of their best football on a Sunday night at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. So I'm going to go with Atlanta tonight, not because I think they need to win, but because I think they can win in this, the kind of atmosphere they're going to be in. So I got Atlanta tonight.
Well, the roof of the dome of Mercedes-Benz will be open for this game, and we should have some good weather. I mean, luckily I was in Kentucky on Friday night, so I missed the another monsoon that hit the metro Atlanta area. I heard that 400 got flooded out for a little bit last week, so hope everyone is safe from that. But yeah, I think it's going to be a tough game, a hard game for the Falcons. But again, we need that offensive line to at least give Matt Ryan some time. And it's just been a refrain for Falcons fans the last couple of years, and it's really amazing how much really just crap Matt Ryan gets. He's an exceptional quarterback who's done the best he can under absolutely horrible conditions. And the fact that he's put up the numbers he has is a good testament. I mean, I don't care who you put in behind that line. People are saying, oh, we need a new quarterback. Well, who are you going to put in behind that line?
Yeah.
Who's going to be better
exactly.
behind that line? And it's not many people.
Yeah. Well, Matt Ryan is, I think the main reason Matt Ryan gets so much flack, because he has that nuclear weapon on the outside. And people are believing that. When you have that nuclear weapon, you're supposed to blow everything up.
Right. And I think that's part of the frustration from last year, is that Jones did not get into the offense until, what was it, at least the eighth week. He was just being used as a decoy, a very expensive decoy. I don't think he was 100% last season.
At the same time, Julio scares everybody.
Right.
So even if he's 100%, you don't really want to get too far up on him like that. You know that if you it's kind of hard to really play man coverage with someone like Julio Jones. Like he commands double coverage. You got to run, or he's gonna reduce your defense to his own.
Right.
So that right there, you know, when you're dealing with Matt, you know, unfortunately, you know, or fortunately, he's fortunate enough to have a weapon like Julio at the same time. But when things don't go right.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, people are like, hey, well, you got Julio. So we don't want to hear it.
And I think a lot of it is the Super Bowl from a few years ago. I think we would have a much different conversation if the Falcons had actually won that game. It's like, oh, okay, Matt Ryan is a Super Bowl winning quarterback. Okay, we'll give him some slack.
That's not fair, but there's no question
it's not fair. That's the play calling.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you want, Matt Ryan, to overrule what his offensive people are telling him? I guess people are saying yes.
But then
if you do that, then he's going to get pulled out. Then he'll probably get pulled out. And you're going to have this incredible controversy that will overshadow a Super Bowl victory. But I guess, hey, it's a Super Bowl victory.
It happens all the time. You know, we can say this about the Atlanta Falcons. You know, when they played against Patriots, you also say this about the goal line situation, the infamous goal line scenario that was Seattle.
Right.
You know, some people are saying, okay, Russell Wilson should have audibled out of that one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then we could be like with Jared Goff. You know, when I went on the little literacy rant. You know, when you see your defense, when Bill Belichick is pretty much switching the defense up, mid-sentence on you, you got to know to audible out of certain situations. So, you know, with the defense, with the offensive scheme that was Atlanta during the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, you know, if you don't want to be three and out and like that during the third and fourth quarters.
No.
When you're up by 26 points. You know, sometimes you guys got to run the ball, but, you know, that's, you know, hindsight is 20/20. But, you know.
Well.
That still leaves a bad taste in my mouth. But on a more lighter optimist note, we look at the Arizona Cardinals.
Larry Fitzgerald.
Granted, they lost today
mm-hmm.
against, I would say, a superior Baltimore team. But I seen 349 yards out of Kyler Murray. Or was it 323? Is it 323 or 349?
Well, if you're over 300 for a rookie, you're doing something well.
Against a defense like Baltimore.
Right.
Headed by Terrell Suggs.
And this gets into Daniel's point about how the NFC West might be the best division in football. And I think I think Daniel has a point. We are the last three guys to do a podcast. Very quickly, guys, college football, I want to mention this. We had another example of a team taking the money and running, and this time it was the Citadel Bulldogs. They came into Atlanta.
Yeah.
They got $450,000. They gave Georgia Tech a loss. And this is something we've been talking about a lot is in terms of the transition to a more, well, modern offense under Jeff Collins. It's going to take some time. You're going to get bumps in the road. Will Jeff Collins get that time to get the people he needs, to get that system he needs? Because this is people are saying this is an embarrassing loss to Georgia Tech. And actually, the ACC kind of took it on the chin yesterday. Kansas defeated Boston College. I think the gap between Clemson and the ACC is a lot bigger than Alabama and the SEC. Alabama and Georgia and the SEC.
Oh, yeah. That's an understatement, John.
So, I mean, but yeah, what do you take from that Citadel victory over Georgia Tech yesterday?
You know, I was in North Carolina with my wife yesterday, and I saw the score.
Did you lose your shirt? You were at the casinos up there, right? You still have your shirt?
Yes, I was in Sheridan. Yeah.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah.
Just
so, you know, it was crazy because I was explaining to my wife and I was explaining to everybody else that was on that trip because there was a lot of ladies on the trip.
Ah.
That's a money game. Mm-hmm. You know, Georgia Tech should win that game with ease.
Right.
And then I get home, and I hadn't watched the highlights of the game, and I see that Citadel defeated Georgia Tech, and I said, wow, this is the third one this year. This is the third team this year that's possibly stolen money, but I don't know how much Coastal Carolina paid Kansas.
Right.
I'm sorry, how much Kansas paid Coastal Carolina. But I do know that Georgia State got a good amount of money, $950,000
for that Tennessee game, right?
Yeah, to play Tennessee. This looks bad for Jeff Collins' first attempt. It really does. But this may just show what kind of team. Listen, he struggled the first 3 weeks, of course. You're going to struggle against Clemson because Clemson is just that good.
Mm-hmm.
They're great, actually. But then the last 2 weeks, you struggle against South Florida, a South Florida team that lost a lot of starters last year. And then you have the Citadel, an FCS team, come down and beat you. So it's And it's going to be some hard times.
I got news for him. He's going to struggle next week when he goes to Temple. That's going to be a struggle for him, too.
Yeah, and you saw how Temple humbled Maryland yesterday, a Maryland team who had averaged 60-plus points a game in the first 2 weeks and held them to just 17 points. So week to week, this is what we're probably going to see in college football. We're going to see you're going to see the great teams. You're going to see the Georgias, the Alabamas, the Clemsons, the Ohio State. You're going to see them get off, and you're going to be good. But, man, anybody that is not in the top 10, it's going to be a free fall.
Right.
And it's going to be a free for all. You know, I really think it's going to play out that way. And don't look over your shoulders, guys, but there are six Pac-12 teams ranked in the top 25 now. Six. That's amazing, even with USC losing to BYU last night.
Mm-hmm.
So six teams in the Pac-12, they're tied for the most with the SEC. So that's an amazing feat for the Pac-12, a conference that we've always said that is going to have a hard time getting somebody in the college football playoff. But they're playing some pretty decent football right now.
Right. Daniel, before we move on, I got to ask you, do you have something heavy and serious for your last 60 seconds? Because I was going to go to you first, but if it's something really heavy and serious, then we'll just circle back to you later.
No, I don't. I don't have anything heavy or serious. I was going to probably do my letter next week.
Okay, well then, since we are in the last time for that last 60 seconds of things you might have missed, you go first.
Cool. You know, we all have, like, our different segments or whatnot during our last 60 seconds.
Yes.
Or whatever. I think I have one. Of course, I do a letter every now and then. Leon has taken the certified and validated thing to its highest peak. And you, of course, John, has done the "you've been outscored by the U.S. women's national thing." I think it's great. So I may end up coming up with two more things. One will be a hashtag salute.
Okay.
Where I salute players, coaches, people who've done something in the world of sports that needs to be recognized. But this week I'm going to do something called buy-in.
All right.
And we don't talk about baseball very often.
No, we don't. We should. And hopefully with the playoffs coming up, we'll be in the fact that the Braves are in, and hopefully by our next show we'll have clinched at least the National League East Division crown, if not the number one seed in the National League. Hopefully we'll be talking about that next week.
And it's funny you speak of the Atlanta Braves, because that's the team that I want for people to start buying in. I would buy in on the Atlanta Braves. I don't know. I think their magic number may still be at four. I know they took a loss today to the Nationals.
Right.
But they've clinched the playoff berth. But to clinch the division, I think their magic number is still four. Listen, when we talk about baseball, sometimes it's not about how good you've been all season. And Atlanta has been great all season, offensively especially. But they're starting to heat up. And they're starting to heat up at the right time. The bats are starting to work. And what's really, really going to make Atlanta dangerous is when Nick Markakis comes back. He's pretty much the heart and soul of that team. Outside of Freddie Freeman, because Freddie Freeman is the leader. He's the one that makes that thing go. You got Ozzie Albies batting tremendously well. Ronald Acuna is out of his mind. He might be the best player on our team. He might be maybe the third or fourth best player in baseball, if you ask me. But then the one thing that we probably have the best home run celebration. Josh Donaldson has really caught the attention of people everywhere. He has about 36 or 37 home runs this year. Should have been an all-star this year.
Mm-hmm.
But every time he hits that home run, the umbrella comes out. I think that's just the best home run celebration that money could buy. I don't think anybody can top that right now. So if there is any buy-in, Atlanta fans, I know how we are. I know that we are tough on our Atlanta sports teams, and we've had some heartbreaks from them. But I think we should buy in on the Atlanta Braves. It's just saying. let's buy in a little bit. Let's put some stock into the Atlanta Braves this year.
Well, they're certainly the Penguins' favorite team. I'll say that. Well, we got Now we're talking. I'm going to do a little bit of a segment called this one. We will call the very warm region downstairs has just experienced a cool front because something has happened. Boy. Very, very interesting. Now we all know that next week in the SEC, CBS is going to have a doubleheader. They're going to have Georgia Notre Dame as their last game. And interestingly enough, they're going to have Auburn and Texas A&M as the first game, which is a very good game because both those squads are top 25 teams. Why is this so interesting? Well, this is the first time in recorded memory that that the game that is not on CBS is Tennessee and Florida. Usually, Tennessee and Florida is always on, but CBS went in a different direction, largely because CBS has finally caught on that Tennessee is not the Vols of 1998. I hate to tell you this, fans. 98 was 21 years ago. Your team is not there, and it's going to take a couple of years for them to get there. Actually, the tweet yesterday, I you guys are not on Twitter, so you didn't see this, but someone put out, I think a reputable college football site said, upset alert with the sirens going, upset alert, Tennessee 14, Chattanooga 0. So, implying that...
Hey, wait a minute, say that again, John.
Upset alert, Tennessee 14, Chattanooga 0.
Oh, wow.
Implying it's an upset that Tennessee was ahead of FCS Chattanooga, which was the tweet of the day yesterday. So finally, finally, people are catching on. And Tennessee was on SEC on CBS four times last year. They'll offer Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, and Florida. But now it seems like CBS has finally caught on that the Vols are definitely not what they used to be in 1998, and it's going to be a while before they come back. Problem is, Tennessee's fans think it's 1998, and they don't understand why it's not 1998. So if Jeremy Pruitt, who did get that win, if he doesn't at least go to a bowl game, those fans are going to be wanting either an explanation or a replacement. So it's either one of those two. Leon.
All right, my last minute will go. This is going to be like a little, it's going to add a little weight to it. I want to touch on the Antonio Brown situation.
And we did not talk about him, and I totally meant to do that. Thank you, Leon.
It's like the way.
We can get into more of him next week.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, there'll be some more developments in the case. But based on what we have thus far, I'm going to be honest with you, I'm not a chauvinistic person. I don't believe in sexism, which means I don't believe excluding women from certain things based on them being women. But I look at, like, the way things are going right now is just getting retarded. I mean, my goodness, it's like if you're an African-American male with money, you got to be careful out here because everybody's coming to get you. For example, you have someone like Antonio Brown who calls the big brouhaha with his departure from the Raiders, as unorthodox as it may seem. You know, it left a bad taste in the mouths of a lot of fans of NFL football. And then it was later revealed that he was actually online searching for ways to get out of that contract.
And how to use social media to do it.
Man, so, I mean, what a paper trail.
Exactly. We mentioned this last week. He wanted to go to the Patriots. The Steelers wouldn't trade him to the Patriots. So when they traded him to Oakland, he said, I'm going to make Oakland a living you-know-what, so they'll release me. I'm going to walk in with tinfoil over my head. You know, I'm going to do everything I can do to make myself so toxic that they will pay me to leave. And then I'm going to go to New England. And that's exactly what he did. Now, if a player wants to do that bad enough, it's really hard to stop him.
So now that's going to give a whole lot of people ideas going into the future. In time that a team trades you to a place that you don't want to go, just go all Antonio Brown.
Exactly.
So then, as a result, he is, you know, a lot that left a lot of bad left a bad taste in a lot of people who in the NFL, you know, as far as his unprofessionalism and all that. But I would not wish anybody to be falsely accused of sexual assault. And based on what we, the information provided by the case, it stated that they had, there's pictures of her with him in the bed. They've known that they were, they had a previous relationship, be it professional. They've had contact sexual. I mean, she's accusing him of sexual assault on three different occasions.
Right.
I'm trying to wrap my head around that, but it doesn't make sense. And when things don't make sense, there's a lot more to the story.
Well, as I was telling you before we got on air, this is a civil case, not a criminal case. And the standards of proof are a little different. In a criminal case, it's beyond a reasonable doubt. But this is a civil case, which means preponderance of evidence. It's a lot easier to prove your claim in a civil matter than it is a criminal matter.
And
exactly.
Being that it's not a criminal case, that's another red flag for me. But like I said, she's just. It seems to me that it's a money grab. And this is because we looked, and the reason why I said the African American thing, because you got to look at the thing with Porzingis.
Mm-hmm.
You know that went away. I think Daniel, you're one who broke that story on this show X amount of months ago. That went away. The Robert Kraft thing kind of went away.
Well, it didn't. Well, that's different because that is a criminal matter.
Right. But
So the lawyers are working behind the scenes. Yeah. And I'm certain that we won't see the video evidence that they have. And quite frankly, I don't want to see the video evidence that they have. Nothing. Do you want to see Robert Kraft's junk?
Absolutely not.
No. And I know, Daniel, do you want to see Robert Kraft's junk? We lost. Hang on. I think Daniel's cord came out.
So no, I got you.
Okay.
I got you.
Yeah, you don't want to see Robert Kraft's junk, do you?
No.
No one wants to see that.
Not at all.
But if he is guilty, and, if he is guilty of the. I think. Again, this is a. Let's not go too far down the rabbit hole here.
He won't be found guilty, I guarantee you that.
Yeah, he won't be found guilty because it's not really him, it's more the proprietors. Who should be found guilty because they're the ones running this. And if it's true they were using illegal sex slaves, however you want to call it, if that's true and that's what their purpose was, then the proprietors need to go to prison for a very long time.
Right.
So that's that.
But in the case of Antonio Brown, granted that left a bad taste in everybody's mouth about his lack of professionalism and the paper trail that was revealed of the route that he went to get released. But I do not wish that on the man, to have your livelihood threatened behind a false accusation.
Right.
I just look at it. We got to place everything in perspective here. And it's kind of like I wish the man best of luck personally,
mm-hmm.
not professionally.
Right. And you can do that.
Right. Personally, I wish that man nothing but good health and good times.
But I hope he loses in the AFC Championship game and doesn't get to go to a Super Bowl.
Exactly, especially if you're playing against my team. You know what I'm saying? Because every time it's like, dang, that's the route he wound up on the Patriots. That's what's bigger? The Golden State Warriors acquiring Kevin Durant in the offseason,
mm-hmm.
coming off a championship run, or the New England Patriots acquiring Antonio Brown coming off a championship run. I'm not saying the Golden State won the championship the year previous, but, they're more than capable of winning one without the man.
Right.
Just like the Patriots are more than capable. I mean, how bad did they beat the team they played before last week? I mean, what was the score? Some insane amount of offensive against an insane of lack of defense on another team.
Right.
And now they won the game today 43-0. I mean, these guys are going undefeated, looks like to me. It seems. So, I'm all over the place in this one. But I wish the man luck professionally. I wish the man the worst luck professionally.
Right.
But I do wish him the best.
I just wish that. And to finish off of this whole thing, I'm just glad that today we were able to see him play football and we were able to talk about him football-wise.
Right.
Because it's just ridiculous for us to have to talk about the one of the top two receivers in football outside of between the lines, in between the hedges or whatever. And this has been, it's been just crazy.
And that's going to wrap it up. And speaking of between the hedges, next week we'll break down the result of that Georgia Notre Dame battle. Two top 10 teams mm-hmm. going out at Sanford Stadium. So we'll be talking about that. We'll also be talking week 3 NFL football. We'll be talking all that. Baseball, basketball camps will be opening up. So a lot of stuff going on the last three guys to do a podcast. We'll also have special guests to be announced a little bit later. Also, I want to thank head coach Rob Lanier, incoming Georgia State head man, for graciously taking some time out as he prepares for his first Midnight Madness and his maiden campaign down at Georgia State. Hope to be able to speak with him in further detail throughout the year. For Daniel Bolton and Leon Brown, I'm John Morgo. Thanks so much for joining us here on The Last Three Guys Do a Podcast. Tell a friend, tell an enemy, tell somebody. Don't tell the person who accused Antonio Brown, but you can tell his lawyer and other people for that. So we'll see you on 7 days. This has been The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast.